Welcome to episode 15 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Everybody's talking about the health effects of lighting. Circadian rhythm, color temperature, temporal modulation. We've talked about it here on the show. You know Greg and I are into it for sure. Why? Because we want to make some money selling people healthy lighting systems. Lighting systems that increase productivity. Lighting systems that make life easier for people. Lighting systems that help people sleep. Well, we haven't figured it all out yet, but we brought Greg Gator on to start the conversation, and he started it. So we're talking the health effects of lighting on Get a Grip on Lighting. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Keystone Technologies and their new Sign Hero LED sign tubes. Come on, man. What's the last frontier of the LED retrofit game? It's the signs outside of everybody's businesses, largely untouched. Keystone's got all the sizes that are typically used in signs. T8, T12, what do? You disconnect the ballast. You take that line voltage and you slam it into those sockets. Put the Sign Hero bulbs in and Bob's your uncle. Your sign is retrofitted. 50, 60, 70% energy savings. They got all the sizes, all the colors. Visit KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, baby. KeystoneTech.com. Remember, this is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, NAILD.org. Our conference is coming up next month, February. Oh, yeah, baby. Nailed innovation, getting it on. Come on down, visit with us. We'll talk about light bulbs all day. But without further ado, I give you episode 15, brought to you by Keystone Sign Hero. That's right, slipped it in at the end. KeystoneTech.com, Sign Hero, episode 15, Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Greg Yetter.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Say hi to my co-host, Greg Eric.
Hey, Greg. Great to see you.
You too, Greg. Thank you.
What is human-centric lighting, Greg?
Human-centric lighting, I would define as lighting that makes you look better, feel better, and also to make the environment around you look better so that you perceive it as something that is more enjoyable, more pleasurable.
How is that not hogwash? Because to me, as a light bulb salesman, I mean, we you know, I got people on the counter. They don't want to pay 10 cents more for anything. How do you really explain that to them? Is it not, is it being something that's legitimate?
Well, number one, there's a lot of scientific research that's come out in the past 15 years or so, and more so recently. Most of the research says that blue light at different times of the day is either good for you or bad for you. So you would want something with a lot of blue light in the day generally, and not a lot of blue light at night, which would help you sleep and be more productive during the day. Now, that could get very expensive with lots of fancy controls and things like that, but it doesn't have to be. And in addition, there are some more standards coming out, such as Title 24, WELL building standards, that talk about things like CRI, even though it's not a perfect metric, flicker, the R9 values. These types of things are becoming more relevant in the market. And as we see a drive in the price downward in LEDs, we're also seeing a lot of these human-centric lighting technologies come down in price too. And they still are more expensive, but there is increased interest.
How do you communicate that value to the average light bulb consumer, light user? You know, we deal with commercial customers primarily. And yep. How do you convey that message that it's important for them to care about it?
Well, there are a number of things. So the first is that most people are focused on energy efficiency and getting that rebate that DLC would provide today. You guys talk a lot about that on your show. But there's some other research that says, hey, listen, energy is only part of the equation. And since we're already saving most of the energy that we could save with lighting, you know, we might be able to go from 8 watts to 1 watt, but it's not as big as of a difference from 8 watts to 60 watts. Now we're looking more at the human aspects of it. So there's something that I really like to look at. It's the 330-300 rule. And it says that the costs in your building, only 1% of your cost is energy. Now, energy is significant, but when you compare it to rent and operations and salary and benefits, what you're paying to retain your people to make them happy, energy is a lot lower. So energy is 1%, rent and operations are 9%, and salary and benefits cover that other 90%. You know, just think about it. You would pay somebody a lot more per year than the square footage that they're
but
occupying.
Let me ask you this. Is the understanding of human-centric lighting complete? I mean, or
no.
Is it just a developing situation right now?
It's developing. I would say that most people, not everyone, agrees on the blue light at night, blue light during the day hypothesis. So in general, you want a lot of blue light in the morning or through the day, and you want to minimize that at night. But there are a lot of other aspects that we just don't know about. There's a lot of fragmentation in the product that's out there. Just because it's early, it's just like LED was 10 years ago or 8 years ago.
I think a lot of the stuff I've heard is that blue light never is sort of where it's going, where, you know, the higher Kelvin temperatures are just not where it's at from a human health perspective. And this idea of tuning it throughout the day, why don't you just stick with the lower Kelvin temperatures? Why not that instead of this, you know, tuning from, because introducing Greg E, wouldn't introducing tuning significantly increase the cost of any human-centric lighting practically installed in the field?
Absolutely, yeah. The controls involved alone would be a huge cost to it.
So I think the best thing to do would just be to stick with those lower Kelvin temperature lights so that you don't have the downside of the circadian rhythm. And I'm not sure that there's any evidence that this blue light upside in the morning is real or imagined. Can you comment on that, Greg? Why?
Yeah, absolutely. Number one, I think that tuning is not necessary, although in certain applications, it's really great. Like I have tunable lighting that was very expensive in my house. And it's awesome because I can have that 1800K at night, very dim. And then right now it's like a 5000K, very bright light. In terms of the economics of it, you know, you don't really need to have tuning. But even then, there is a lot of research that points to blue light at the right time of day being quite important. And what else is interesting is I'm actually running a study right now, just like an online survey. And it finds that most men actually prefer cool lighting, even at home during the day.
But I would say they
don't
know what they prefer. I would say that most people don't know what they prefer. I mean, you look at, if you ask somebody, you know, you walk into like, I was in a noodle shop the other day, you know, Foga or whatever. I'm sitting there, they got 5,000 Kelvin MR16 in the ceiling and it looks horrible. But if you ask them, they say, oh, it's the white light, we want white light. So I think most people don't really understand, especially, and I think most light bulb salesmen don't understand what it is people want. So I don't know if a survey helps us here, Greg. Why? Let me ask you something else though. So
yeah,
you're doing
sure.
this research and you're finding out that high Kelvin temperature lighting is helpful. How is it helpful to anybody and when? And what proof do you
okay.
have? Like causational proof, or is it just correlated? So answer
right,
a couple
so first,
of questions there.
Yeah. So first of all, the survey is only step one. So I agree, there needs to be a lot more to be done. That's just something interesting I just noticed from my survey results. But obviously, don't take that with too much weight because there needs to be more research done, more experiential studies to really understand what kind of light people like, age groups, gender, ethnicity, all of these things play into preference in lighting. Could you actually repeat the rest of that question?
So you said that 5,000 Kelvin or high color temperature lighting or blue lights high in the blue spectrum is
yep.
beneficial at certain times of the day and that, you know, this is known or proven. Explain to me how it's known or proven or and whether it's causational or correlated.
I think a lot of it's actually correlational studies and a lot of the work has been done in kind of extreme scenarios, like people with dementia and Alzheimer's patients, where they're looking at sundowner syndrome to see if you can mitigate the effects of circadian rhythm, extreme circadian rhythm disruption, where these people are waking up, going to sleep all the time. A lot of times this type of lighting can cut down on it. We know of the mechanism in the body that is, there's these specific sensors in the eyes that are sensitive only to blue light. And they basically tell you it's daytime, it's nighttime right now. And even, you know, I don't really want to say if this is correlation or causation yet, but there was a study that just came out from CBRE, which is one of the biggest real estate property managers in the world. And a circadian friendly lighting system, which actually went from like 2,700K to 4,000K, I believe, they actually saw an 18% boost in productivity. And they also saw that 76% of employees felt happier, and half of the employees felt healthier. So again, you know,
those are monster. More research. That's a monster. Those are monster numbers. That's true,
yeah,
those are monster. Like if the people knew it was going on, and 76% said they felt healthier, but if there was like a double blind thing going on with CBRE there, where they had 50% of people not having this and 50% of people having this, and neither one knew which was which, and 76% said they felt healthier versus 26% in the control group or whatever, then it would mean something. But if they knew what was happening, and they knew that if this study was kind of ad hoc and not managed by a real researcher at a institution like, I don't know, you know, Drexel University, say, whatever, you know, someone that knew how to do a real research study into this sort of thing, then I don't think it means much. So I think that study needs to be prefaced, because those would be monster numbers if they were legit.
Absolutely.
Greg, you want to jump on this a little bit?
Yeah, I'm just, what I'm really trying to relate it to is at what point does it start making sense to sell it, and will it be a selling point? I know a lot of the market still has the initial energy savings to be had. Is it going to be tied in with energy savings and human-centric lighting at the same time now, or are we waiting until we get to a point where it's more affordable?
Okay, so I think there are a few aspects to that question, Greg. Number one is, you know, DLC is often tied to rebate programs right now, so most people are going to go toward DLC. And we do see some early signs of DLC working on human-centric aspects, but they're kind of not getting into it completely yet, because I think they're not sure which direction to take. But they are looking at things like flicker. They're looking at color tuning, but only in a very limited sense. They even have an allowance for 90 CRI lighting, where I think it can be 5% less efficient than an equivalent 80 CRI system. But then you start to look at things like Title 24, which is California's potentially controversial energy standard. And what's really interesting about what California is doing there is, in the past, they've always focused on, we need to save energy, energy efficiency, energy efficiency, energy efficiency. Not even incentives, just it's tied into law. But now what they're doing is they're saying, like, listen, you know, we saved enough energy with this lighting. Now let's focus on the quality of light. Let's focus on getting that flicker, that dangerous flicker, out of there, and let's focus on good color rendering. So I think we've got a ways to go, but it's not like we can't do anything, because one of the biggest opportunities that I see in the market is this is a way that product could be sold at a higher margin. Now, again, it's not going to happen. It's not going to be on the scale of DLC, but you have an opportunity to sell product into the WELL building standard, into Title 24, and maybe a future version of the DLC that could be at a higher margin than what lighting is right now.
So what definable measures would you say this human-centric lighting has? You mentioned high CRI and flicker, you know, and all that, but what definable measurable characteristics would that be? And how would you, what would you rate as?
Yeah, so of course there are a lot of different aspects to human-centric lighting, and again, it's a bit of a Wild West type of scenario.
But the number one is snake oil stuff to me. Like, you know, I mean, hey. not that I would get it wrong, but you know, Greg, we would be perfect.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a lot of people could ride this donkey, in a way that is not necessarily set to Title 24 or say some other regulation. So is Title 24, yeah. So you were about to answer something. I forgot what it was, but I want to ask you this. Is there a standard that sets out what is good human-centric lighting and what isn't? Or is this developing right now?
There's aspects of it in Title 24. It's more saying, it has to be 90 CRI, your R9 values have to be greater than 50, and you have to have your flicker in accordance with the IEEE, 1975. Yeah, 1789. Yeah. And they also have a little bit of additional written onto that in their JA10 document. I think that's one of the most comprehensive right now. You can also look at the WELL building standard. A lot of that plays more into the design of the lighting, so the lighting design that a lighting designer or an ESCO or somebody like that would come up with. But take a glimpse into those because you'll see the future of where DLC or where the industry could head.
Now, what you mentioned there doesn't have anything to do yet with Kelvin temperature or tunability. You're saying it would be nice to have, but it doesn't say it needs to have.
Yeah, I don't think an office needs tunability. I think that it's nice to have in a home. It has to be cheaper than the $60 a light bulb system that I have here, which is way too expensive. And it also has to be a lot simpler to set up, to use. You don't have to have an engineering degree to be able to use these types of things, or you shouldn't have to.
Go ahead, Greg. Yeah.
So what Kelvin temperature would you suggest then for a typical office setting?
Again, I think that a lot more research needs to be done there. I've seen a lot of people say that they like either 4,000, somewhere in the cool white scenario, but I don't want to prescribe a number right there.
Greg Eric, what color temperature is your office lighting?
3,500.
Same with mine. Okay. Mine's 2,700 in the studio I'm in right now. But so okay. You're 3,500. I think, call me crazy, I think 3,500 is the 100% the right color temperature for an office. And I think 4,000K is the right color temperature for a warehouse, although most of the ones we do are at 5,000 because that's what people want. But I think 4,000 mm-hmm. is the best for a high bay installation, and I think 3,500 is the best for an office. I don't even know why I think that. Greg, why do I think that? Do you know why I think that?
I think it's because of the experience you've had and when you see it in different facilities. Yeah. You've seen a lot of different lights. So.
Yeah, I think 5,000K is too white for anything. I think if you took out the, let's say you had a warehouse full of LED T8 tubes and you changed them from 5,000K to 4,000K, and the next day everyone came to the shop, I don't think they would even notice. As long as they were all changed at once. Whereas I think there's something about high Kelvin temperature lighting in a low ceiling environment that I find harsh. Although I find lots of people want it. I don't know. This is a tough one. I think you're in an arena that is filled with vipers and liars and people that are going to exploit this to their advantage. And I think it's also something that's developing. Like you have there's a combination of factors here. You have flicker, you have color temperature, you have tunability, you have, what is this R9 you're talking about? I don't even know what it is. What is that R9 stuff you're talking about?
All right. Yeah, so we talk about CRI all the time, right? And there's actually a swatch of colors that go into CRI and other color rendering indices. And it has 14 colors, and they're R1 through R14. Now, it turns out that in the CRI calculation, they're only taking into account R1 through R8. And those are all generally pastel-ish colors. R9 is red. So R9 is the color that you could have the same 3000 Kelvin bulb, one with like a 0 R9, one with like a 90 R9, and people would think they're completely different because one might look bluish, one might look pretty normal, like a regular incandescent bulb. So that's R9.
So I think there's a this is a very, very developing situation. I don't think there's anything we can put a stamp on it right now and say that this is what is what it is and this is what human-centric lighting is. I think human-centric lighting is in the is very, very much like organic food right now. You know, well, this is organic wine or organic apples or whatever, and you have this stamp on it, and you don't really know what that stamp means. And is that an industry accreditation, or is it a separate thing, or does and does Walmart pay into that accreditation along right. with other industry people that allows them to put this seal or stamp on it? So I don't know. So this Title 24 you're talking about is a combination of IEEE 1789 standard and other things discussing. I think we're in the wild west of HCL. Greg E, what do you think?
Yeah, that's what I'm at too. And I'm I guess the long term question I have is that do you think at some point, and this might be for Greg Y, at least your opinion on it, is that we've done the initial upgrades on energy efficiency. Are we then going to go back and say, okay, you're energy efficient, but now we want to make you human centric and here's your upgrade and there's really no payback. It's all going to be percentages and explanations and studies that we have to attempt to prove.
Right. And I just want to back up that claim that you made about it being the Wild West. Some of the major organizations like the CIE, the Lighting Research Center, AMA, Dark Sky, you know, they all disagree on specifics. So even these organizations that, even the WELL Building Standard, DLC, and Title 24 disagree in some areas or have potential conflicts. So, you know, it's really early. What I would say right now is that I would not trust a manufacturer to make a claim about a product. I would rather see manufacturers provide product that a lighting designer, an architect could use for their desired interpretation of human-centric lighting. Now, in the future, I think that that will change with things like DLC, maybe some other organizations taking a stand on this. It's hard to say if there's going to be a mass overhaul of the lighting. Like we already just, your ESCO came in, you installed all of this high efficiency LED lighting. It's hard to say if a lot of that is going to be changed or not. I think a lot of it might have to do with the performance over time, how many failures you get based on how high quality that product was. And you would look at some of the really bad installations like gas stations, that had some of the early retrofits, the Walmart near me or big box store, any big box store near me that has these early LED retrofits where you walk in and you feel kind of disoriented because you can tell that there's flicker in all 1,000 LED luminaires that are there. So I think some of the worst cases, you'll probably see changes. You'll see an upgrade in office environments where a CEO or somebody like that really believes in the research or believes in the marketing or the snake oil or whatever you want to call it.
It's really hard to sell productivity gains. I mean, to say,
yeah,
to go to somebody and say, you know, hey, if you switch your lighting, your productivity is going to go up by X amount because we have this study from CBRE, Richard Ellis, or whoever did it, and, you know, whether it's Jones, yep, Lang, LaSalle, or whoever. What they want to see is, you know, Dr., you know, XYZ, Professor Emeritus at Oxford University in England is saying this. Then you have a little bit more of, I think, something to stand on. But in terms of, there's too many different angles here. And at the bottom end where you have guys like Greg and I who are selling light bulbs to the end user, what do you pass on to them about this, Greg? I think the only thing I pass on to them is the color temperature and maybe the flicker. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out the flicker here. Greg E., I'm trying to figure out the flicker and the color temperature argument. What are you trying to pass on to the end user through your sales reps or whatever?
At this point on human centric, you know, not really a lot other than make sure you get quality product. And I think some of these measurable deals will have to do with what quality products considered.
What is quality product? I mean, this is such a, right. I mean, I get, you, there's a municipality in Ontario that upgraded all, and I think Los Angeles is in the same boat here, where they upgraded all their streetlights to LED in 2011 or 12, and they're having massive problems. These are $700, $800 light fixtures, and the seals are breaking down and failing, and the water's getting in, and there's burnouts all over the place. When are we going to actually stop perpetuating this LED last forever myth? I mean, I think that's something that is a high time, at least on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. We haven't been that naive, have we, Greg? I mean, it's time for people to realize that the choice, there's this idea that you're never going to replace this light source again, or you're never going to have to make an adjustment on this. New information is going to continually emerge. And whatever, right now on this podcast, we're talking about human-centric lighting. And you have, like I said before we started the recording, Greg Yeter, or Yeter? Greg Yeter?
Yeter, whatever.
Yeter,
I don't really
right?
care.
So, I
Yeah, I've
mean,
heard them
we
all.
were talking about, like, what's my title? Well, I'm a subject matter expert in the field of lighting retrofit. So there you go. Okay. And you're a
Awesome.
human-centric lighting commentator. Like, we don't really, there's no real. Greg's actually has an industry accreditation called the Lighting Certified. He's LC.
Yeah.
But even that, you'll have LCs that are varying, and there's no, college of professional lighting engineers of North America, say. So there's no agreement on this. And I think this idea that number one, LEDs are going to last forever is very, very, very silly. And I think
Yeah.
the, or even 25 years, or, even 10 years, you're starting to get maybe three times the life of a fluorescent tube would be a good, realistic evaluation of potential life. So 7 to 10 years, somewhere in there. But then you have on top of that this idea that you don't have to replace anything again. Well, what if it comes out, like, how many of those bypass LED T8 tubes have you sold into Minneapolis, Greg?
Thousands.
Thousands,
I mean,
right?
hundreds of thousands, yeah.
Right? And let's say it turns out that they're all flickering like crazy. Like T12s, or even worse than T12s, what are you going to do? You're going to go back to those people and say, hey, you know what? Things have changed.
Yeah, you're going to have to. And I think that's one of the things is a perception of LED. And as an industry, people need to quit promoting their warranties so long, because a lot of them actually don't back their warranties and they change their product. And I think just in general, educating people more that LEDs are going to need to be replaced at some point is important. How
And
you
new
do that?
information comes out. I mean,
Yeah.
new
Yeah.
information comes out, and people that have bought into this naive myth, like I can't get over it. When I go to customers and they and I'll be sitting in front of someone and be like, well, this guy's told me his lights last 25 years. That's, 100,000 hours. I said, how long is this? How many hours has this guy been in the lighting business for? I mean, 5,000 hours maybe? I mean, 10,000 hours, 2 years? I mean, how many years, how many hours, right? So people are making claims, oh yeah, and people believe it. And there's got to be something from the lighting industry that says, okay, everybody relax. Electronics fail. We know that. Your cell phone in your pocket is a piece of electronics. Yes, LED light source will outlast some other types of things, but this idea of 25-year life and wall packs that never burn out, I think that's it's gonna jump back to bite us. And I think also a lot of this stuff about LEDs and their effect on the color temperature changes we've made. So going from high pressure sodium, largely outdoors, very low Kelvin temperature, to very high Kelvin temperature lighting, we have no idea, Greg, why, what the impact of that's gonna be in the long run. Do you have anything on that from your end? Like going from high pressure sodium 2100 Kelvin to 5000 Kelvin streetlights everywhere in the world, what the impact of that's going to be.
Well, where it's been installed already, there's been a lot of backlash, both from people not liking it and also some preliminary research that talks about bird migration patterns. It could affect people when they're sitting in their bedroom and that light on the street is shining into their bedroom type of thing.
Do you know that
So
they
it's
can't even
really
measure
hard.
it? Do you know that they can't
Yes.
even, me the satellites can't even measure it? What was it, Greg? Because they can't see. What was Dr. Kaiba telling us?
That they can't see the color of the 5000K that it doesn't show on the satellite image.
The satellite doesn't register the nanometers of 5000 Kelvin lighting as an increase. So when they look at it, it looks like a decrease, but it's because of the camera in the satellite is set to measure high pressure sodium. So
how about that?
Yeah, they don't know exactly what they have. The only way they can determine it is like where they get accurate is like from astronaut pictures on their cameras. And the satellite that measures light level increase doesn't really see 5000K well or at all, apparently. So,
but I mean, we all know that stuff is really low quality too.
What's that? What's low quality?
Like some of the streetlights that have been installed are where you were just talking about the gasket issue in LA. You know, a lot of that stuff, especially the very early stuff, was not so good, and it's going to have to be replaced soon.
So, I mean, I think that as an industry, I don't know if this is, we should stop perpetuating this myth of no replacement in the future. And the other thing, so you had on your list here, though, incentives for human-centric lighting. I don't see any upside for utilities at all in that. Do you?
Nope.
Any of you guys, Greg? Other Greg?
No.
The only thing I could say is if there's a leap in technology that somehow makes a human-centric lighting technology more efficient than a non-human-centric technology. So I agree that for utilities, there's no benefit there. So it has to come from somewhere else.
And then we know, and well, then we also know that the benefits of human-centric lighting have not really been worked out yet. And so I don't think, if I was DLC, I'm looking at human-centric lighting saying, okay, this is a new catchphrase that is like Internet of Things that is popular to talk about right now. But really, the basis of fact is still being worked out and whether or not this is a good argument or whether we should proceed with this. I think the flicker issue is real. I think the Kelvin temperature issue is real. I think those are two things that people that know lighting can sort of stand on and say, hey, you want to measure that, get that Kelvin temperature right for your application if you really want 5000 Kelvin. And I think we need to look out for flicker. But the other effects of, you know, tuning lighting and different times of day, and I don't know if there's a cost-benefit analysis there. I think we can wrap this up now, Greg, Eric, unless you have anything else.
No, that should do it.
Okay. So thank you for coming on the show, Greg. This one, so we're going to still be recording here, but this one might be given. Yeah. So we have a relationship with an electrical magazine. I think this might be the first podcast that goes over to them. What do you think, Greg? Other Greg?
Yeah. We'll send it their way at least. See what they think.
See what they think.
That's so pretty interesting.
It may be a Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, or it may be a part of some exclusive work we do for that magazine. Are you okay with that?
Oh yeah, I'm open to whatever. You guys, cool. This is your show, and I really appreciate everything you've done. You guys bring really excellent perspective that. It's kind of like the silent majority type of perspective.
This is a grassroots podcast, bro. It's a grassroots podcast, man. It comes from people that are being legit, and we don't give a shit about anything in terms of we're only after the truth or we're only after what is legit and, you know, people can stand on and actually, you know, it's one thing to say something to, you know, a bunch of lighting dorks. You know, at a conference, hey, let's talk about Internet of Things or let's talk about, you know, human-centric lighting. Yeah. It's another thing to look a customer in the eye and charge them for something. That's a different transactional point that a lot of lighting dorks are never at. And so they never have to face that. Whereas guys like Greg and I and the members of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors are facing that all the time. We're standing in front of somebody and saying, pay for this. And when you actually, you know, are striving to have integrity, then this Internet of Things stuff and the human-centric lighting mumbo jumbo jargon starts to get a little bit ridiculous. It strikes you as geeky, you know? So, you know, that's what I don't know if we'll include this, but I thought it was a good little spiel by me there, Greg. What do you think, buddy?
That's pretty good. You might
that was a good one. I might keep that in. Hey. You still recording, Scotty? He's recording. Okay, we're good.
Yeah, so, I like that too. I think that you know, you guys have the pulse on where people's perspectives are in regard to changing lighting. Like, a lot of people might think that LED lasts forever right now, which is wrong, as we just discussed. But that might be the impression that the lighting industry has given to people. So it'll be interesting to see where people will stand on flicker and blue light and IoT and all these technologies that may or may not become important in the future.
I'll tell you this, the members of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors were the majority of them, I'm not gonna say all, but the majority of the ones that I'm friends with were never under that impression. Never once got into a situation where they felt like, you know, this stuff is going to last forever, because they've been selling replacement light bulbs for 30 or 40 years.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, it's like, yeah, sure, buddy. Yeah, okay. Oh, 100,000 hours, eh? Okay. Do you know how long that is? Do you know how many hours are in a year? Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff gets thrown about and bantied about by people that are, and I just can't get over the naivete. Or at least, you know, when you come and talk to me, I tell people, I'm the host of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, but you can't tell me that bullshit. Get that out of here. So, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I don't mean to be judgmental, but it's different when you're in the front lines and you're actually asking somebody to give you more money for something. That's where the rubber meets the road, you know, and that's where you're either like, especially if you know that something's not true. So, all right, we'll cut it at that.
Cool.
So yeah, thanks for coming on, Greg. Anything you want to talk about, any conferences or anything you want to advertise? Do you have a website you want to throw out there to the people?
Yeah. I don't need to get too much into my own specifics, but I do want to give a challenge to the industry. I think that there is a lot of truth amidst the snake oil, as we discussed. There are some things that you can do in lighting that are relatively simple to do, not that expensive to do, and people can understand them easily. It just takes a little bit of creativity. So it's just a challenge to see if companies in this industry can think outside of the box around human-centric lighting and maybe approach it from a different angle than it's been approached from before.
I think that approach is flicker and color temperature. I think those are the two areas to focus on. Would you not say so? Or is there somewhere else I'm missing?
I don't want to be super specific. I think that flicker is obvious at this point, especially because DLC is already talking about adding flicker to the standard next year. Color temperature, I think there needs to be more research and understanding on. And a better understanding between people like you who are actually selling lighting and people who are up at the LRC and IES and things like that. But I think that there might be some other aspects of human-centric lighting that people can take a little bit of a creative stance.
What are those?
So I think number one is timing of blue light. Where the lighting is going to be used, simplicity of controls. Do lighting controls really have to be networked to be effective? How easy is a lighting system to commission, especially if controls are required? So these are all aspects that have a lot of room for improvement, that you see some progress here and there, but not a ton.
Greg Garrick?
I think I'm good. Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on. Signing off here.
Really appreciate it. Studios.
Sign hero, baby. Come on, man. Sign hero. We all know this is the last frontier of the LED retro game. You've done your outdoor lights. You did your office lights. You did the warehouse, the factory, the third-party logistics, whatever you got. You did it, but you didn't do the sign. Well, guess who's got them? KeystoneTech.com, Keystone Technologies, Sign Hero. I'm going to read the ad for you. A perfect solution for retrofits or new installations, as well as single or double-sided signs. With revolutionary direct drive technology, there's no need for an external driver or ballast. Saves precious labor time and costs. maintenance professionals install the 360-degree LED sign tube in 5 minutes or less. Come on, baby. Why your customers will love it? Well, we've added optical lenses to the cover of each individual LED chip tube, which eliminates the hot spots and ensures, you know, when you're looking at a sign and you see those, like, one part of the sign is brighter than the other, or even like some of those LED panels that you put in the ceiling and the middle is not as bright as the sides, the edge lit sides. Well, guess what? Keystone solved that problem. Even light distribution for 360 degrees. Come on, man. So they're built to last, 50,000 hour lifetime, 5 year warranty, heavy duty aluminum heatsink ensures the LEDs run cooler for longer. Plastic and aluminum construction ensures less breakage. Visit KeystoneTech.com, KeystoneTech.com. And this is the official podcast of what? You know, what? Who? What? Where? Why? It's the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Come on, man. NAILD.org. You should join the association. Take some educational products. We got LS1. Can you handle LS2? LS2's tough, bro. It's tough. Can you take it? I don't know, man. LS2. And we have LS controls as well. So all you people that have done LS1 and LS2, time to sign up for LS controls. Come on, man. Our convention's coming up next month in February. Visit NAILD.org for information on joining the association, on our convention, educational products, everything else. Thanks to Greg Gator for coming on the show and starting up the conversation on the health effects of lighting. Bye for now.